The Bullock Performance Institute series at Western Michigan University continues tonight with a very special guest artist. I know that around the state of Michigan, many trombonists are putting down and changing their plans, putting down their horns, changing their plans, and driving to Kalamazoo in order to see a performance by a truly top-tier musician with a great story to tell. We have trombonist Jeremy Wilson here in the studio, as well as Steve Wolfenbarger, who's professor of trombone at Western Michigan University. Thank you both for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Steven, I'm going to start with you and help outline the reputation of our guest here, Jeremy Wilson.
Well, I've known Jeremy for probably 10 or 15 years, and we have a few things in common, the first of which is we both graduated from the University of North Texas,
right.
Although Jeremy graduated probably 15 years after I did. But we studied from the same professor there, and I heard about Jeremy and what a great musician he was when he was a student, and had a chance to meet him before he took the audition with the Vienna Phil. But professional trombonists these days, they work their way up into the trombone world. You take, as an orchestral musician, you take countless number of auditions and you experience very little success along the way, and it takes a while. It's a process. To find somebody who can take one audition with one of the world's great orchestras and be successful and win it against some of the best trombonists in the world, you just don't find that kind of thing. And so here with Jeremy Wilson, we have that. He is literally one of the best trombonists out there. And it's great to have him here. I mean, this is the third time he's been here at Western Michigan University, and my students love hearing him play, and I just encourage everybody to come tonight because they're really in for a treat.
Well, the concert begins at 7:30, at least the music portion does. Mm-hmm. If you arrive at 7 o'clock, there is a chance to meet Jeremy as you'll be talking on stage, I think, with mm-hmm. Evan Clifton,
yeah. Another Evan is trombone. One of my recent graduates and yeah. doing pretty well himself, actually.
Yes, he is.
He's working on a master's right now, and he's been playing part-time with Cleveland Orchestra and a number of other well-known orchestras, too, so he's doing great.
Well, we're off to a great start, but Jeremy, there's a lot of story to tell here. So you have this extraordinary moment that comes in your life where one audition for an orchestral position and you'd never been in an orchestra before, suddenly you are granted that spot mm-hmm. and have to change your life. But I'd like to go back a little further and learn about how you grew up, and were you aware that your talent on the trombone was pretty extraordinary?
Well, no. I had no idea anything about trombone or orchestral music in any way. I grew up in rural Middle Tennessee in a little town called McMinnville, Tennessee. And I was basically allowed to listen to, I won't say allowed, I was basically exposed to Southern gospel music and country and Western music, being near the Nashville, scene and all of the country and Christian music that happens there. That was basically what I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were in a Southern gospel quartet, and so my musical upbringing was basically going around to these little tiny country churches of 30 and 40 and 50 people and listening to four-part harmony. And so singing was always a big part of my upbringing, but I never was interested in playing a band instrument or an orchestra instrument until I got into middle school. And actually, I wanted to play saxophone, but I mean, what middle schooler doesn't want to play saxophone, right? I mean, it's just a super
right.
cool instrument. I mean, that's just science, right? But the band spots were assigned alphabetically, and as a W last name, the only spots available for me were trumpet or trombone. And so I tried out both of those, and it just turned out trombone was better for me.
You chose the right instrument.
I think it's worked out okay, although I did play some trumpet in high school as well. But yeah, trombone was, not something that I had just always wanted to do. But then it turned out I was good at it, and then it worked really well. Because just the mechanics of the trombone, the repertoire of the trombone, actually, it's one of the instruments that's the closest to the mechanics of the human voice. There are so few bends and turns in it, and just the way it's designed and constructed, and the way you play a trombone is very similar actually to singing. And so I think that's one of the reasons that it was kind of that sweet spot for me, because I grew up hearing singing, I grew up singing, and then I picked an instrument that does that kind of music very well.
I grew up in a small town, and one of the things I'm grateful for was that there was a sense of equality between the residents. We were all kind of in the same boat.
Yep.
Not a huge discrepancy between people with the haves and have-nots.
Sure.
And so also, when you grow up in a small town, people tend to take on a lot of different roles. I mean, there's only so many people to do things. So the people who play music end up playing in so many different situations.
That's right.
And you learn that music is a communicative tool. It's it's a way to make people who work hard really happy.
That's right.
When they get a chance.
That's right. You know, I tell my students all the time that if art isn't communication, then what is it? And if we aren't making music in order to communicate something, if we aren't making art to make the world a better place in some way, then what's the point? It's an awful lot of time, energy, and expense to spend on something that's just internally valuable to us. And there is a self-expression element to it, of course. But ultimately, I think music is for sharing. And, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the way that technology is progressing, you know, I tell my students that in 20 years, my iPad will probably have the computing power to exactly replicate my sound, but it can never replicate my heart and what it takes to be a human being. And so if that doesn't come out through my music, then in 20 years, I'm going to be obsolete.
Well, I am optimistic about people and acoustic instruments.
Of course.
Because not only are they a great way to communicate, but they're really fun
to
play.
Right.
And Jeremy, what happened next? Did you come across a teacher that said, do you know that this is an actual career?
Well, through high school and the early part of college, I thought that I would be a high school band director. I had this sort of passion for teaching. That sort of inborn spark of you know, I have knowledge or I have ability and I want to share it with you. And what I have and you don't yet have, I want you to have. And I think that's the heart of a teacher. And so I wanted to be in a place where I could do that. And the only path I really knew of coming out of high school was I'll be a band director. I'll do what I had seen my band directors do. And it wasn't until about my third year of undergraduate that I started to be, you know, a top-notch player and started to be one of the better players in the studio and things like that, that my teacher, Don Huff, at the University of Tennessee, said, you know, you could do this. You could make a performance career if you really, you know, keep going on the path that you're going. I mean, you're on an upward trajectory. You're not ready yet, but you could get there. And that was the first time that I even started to consider a performance career, but I still had this desire to teach. And so that's actually when I changed my sort of career path to being, to doing what I do now and doing what Steve does, being a college trombone professor, because that allows a person the time to practice and the time to perform still, but also teach at a very high level. And so that's what I sort of aimed at doing. That's one of the reasons I chose the University of North Texas for my graduate study, because I got a teaching fellow position. I was able to have undergraduate students. I conducted a trombone choir, and I was able to have my hands all over, you know, every different part of that program. Still, even then, I didn't consider that I would perform full time ever. And it wasn't until I got invited to audition for the Vienna Philharmonic that even became something that I was considering fully.
I'm speaking with trombonist Jeremy Wilson, who performs tonight on the Bullock Performance Institute series. The live and interactive series begins at 7 with a conversation on stage with Jeremy Wilson. And at 7:30, we'll hear about a 75-minute recital of pieces that we are going to cover this hour on WMUK, pieces by Erika Wazin, for example, Philippe Gobert, Korn Gold, one of my favorites, and Florian Magnus Meyer. That's all coming up. Let's get back to the story. Now, we thank you for taking us right to this extraordinary opportunity. Mm. So orchestras will call soloists they're interested in?
Not normally. the way that I got into that audition was very, very rare. In fact, I've never heard of it happening in the trombone world in any other way, in any other time. So there's an International Trombone Association. I believe Steve has been the president of that association before. And it's heavily involved still on the board of directors and things. And they have a set of competitions every year for high school age students all the way through college age students. And I entered a CD for one of these competitions. And they take the CDs at that time, now it's all digital, but they take the CDs and they send them out to three different judges across the world. One of the judges of that competition was Ian Bousfield, who at that time was principal trombone of the Vienna Philharmonic. And they had an opening for second trombone. It was a position they called a Wechselposaune position, a changing trombone, where it's a second trombonist moving up to first or principal trombonist whenever they need it, and a sort of a utility kind of player. And they had had an audition for this spot already twice and hadn't found anybody. They weren't able to actually engage anyone, so they were getting maybe a little desperate. They were starting to, you know, let's just find good players wherever we can, because I think kind of going through the traditional routes of trying to advertise and recruit and get a good talent pool just weren't working for them at the time. So Ian hears 40 or 50 CDs through this competition, and he contacts the competition coordinator and says, okay, these are my results from the competition. I'm really interested in whoever CD number 4 is, because it's all done by number, so they don't know who they're listening to.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because he said, I'm pretty certain it's European, and wouldn't it be great if it were a woman? Because, as you know, the Vienna Philharmonic has a horrible history with women in the orchestra. They didn't even allow women in the orchestra until the year 2000, which is unbelievable to me, but that's the way the orchestra was at the time. And it turns out it wasn't a woman and it wasn't a European, it was me.
It was an American from Tennessee.
It was an American from Tennessee, you know, and... it turned out that it was me, and we checked it several times to make sure that the CD he was referring to actually was my CD, and it was. And basically, he said, from hearing this CD, I'm hearing something in this person's playing that I think would work really well in our orchestra, and so I would like this person to apply for an audition, and I'll make sure that they get an audition. And my only stipulation is I want them to come a week early for the audition and do a little studying with me so that I can prep them. Yeah. And that was me. That was what ended up happening.
Was that the first time you had met Mr. Mr. Bousfield,
yes. Yeah. Ian was the principal trombone of the London Symphony for something like 13 years.
Oh, wow.
And or 12 years. And then he came and was principal trombone of the Vienna Philharmonic. He now teaches at Bern in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
And is an internationally renowned soloist. But he's actually going to be coming down to Vanderbilt University in a couple weeks as a guest artist.
So, well, as I should tell people, that's where you teach now.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
So that's how it came about, and I started to send some audio files to Ian of some orchestral excerpts, because the things he was hearing on the CD were solo pieces. He said, it might be good if I hear you do some excerpts before I give you an official invitation. So I sent him some of the standard excerpts, and he liked what he heard and wanted to keep pursuing the invitation. His colleagues in Vienna ended up thinking that he was kind of crazy for doing this. You know, you're inviting this person who's never taken an orchestra audition, who has never played in a professional orchestra, and you're doing this based on MP3s and a CD that you're hearing.
That's right. That is crazy.
It is. It is.
Right.
But I ended up doing, you know, a 3-month crash course in orchestral auditions with Vern, and just an unbelievably intense period of time trying to go from having no orchestral experience to trying to hold my own with the best in the world. And so I show up in Vienna and have a lesson live in person with Ian. And it's this nerve-wracking moment for both of us, because he's hoping that I sound as good in person as he thinks I do.
And he's put a lot of eggs
and I'm
in
hoping
basket.
That he doesn't think that he's made a giant mistake. And I play through my excerpts, and And he doesn't make actually a whole lot of comments. But then shortly afterwards, he goes into the next room and confers with the bass trombonist of the orchestra, Hans Strucker. And they start speaking very rapidly in German, and I have no idea what's going on. And long story short, basically they had decided that they wanted to put me through from the what they call the Studentenprobespiel, the student audition, which is, you know, 100 or more people from which they might advance two or three. They wanted to put me straight through to the final audition. So basically that's what happened. I was put through to that audition. I was one of maybe two people in that audition that didn't already have a job. And there were people with very high profile orchestra jobs already there. And that's how the audition came about.
Yeah. I wanted to make it more clear that this idea of a utility player is still it's actually an extremely coveted position that all of the trombonists in the orchestra world would have been aware of and thinking about and applying for and probably literally applying for.
Yes.
So that's extraordinary. You decided to say yes, obviously.
Yes.
This affected more than just you changing your whole life and moving to Vienna.
That's right. I had been married to my high school sweetheart for 2 years already at that point. And Christy at first was pretty shocked. She was shocked when I got the chance to audition, and then she went with me to the audition. She had to get her passport in order to make that happen. She had never been outside the country before. I had only been outside once before that. So we went over, and we turned it into a vacation, basically, because I didn't really think I was going to win this thing. So it's like, let's at least get a week-long, you know, vacation in this beautiful city. So we went to Vienna, went through the audition process, and then after I won it, Ian handed me a cell phone right after they announced that I had won the audition, and on the other end was Vern Kagreis, my professor, and I was able to tell him over the phone, "Hey, I've won this thing, you know, and I don't really know what's going to happen now. I'll talk to you later. I'm sure this call is absurdly expensive, so I'll talk to you later. Bye." And then I go about, you know, I went out for lunch with Ian. And we started to talk about, you know, what's now going to happen. What's the row of dominoes that's now been started. And I had no idea what the job looked like. I had no idea what it paid. I didn't really do that much research because I didn't think I was going to win. So we're in the middle of talking over lunch. And then I just started to, in my mind, realize that I've told Vern that I've won this job. And he has probably now shouted it from the rooftops. And so people are going to start sending me emails, and people are going to start posting on Facebook, and my wife is in the hotel across town, and that's how she's going to find out, and then I'm not going to have a wife anymore because she's going to divorce me. And so right in the middle of a sentence, I just said, "Ian, I have to go. I'm really sorry, but I have to go." And I ran, you know, the 6 or 7 blocks to our hotel. I pop in the room. And Christy's sitting there on the bed with this expectant look on her face, and the internet had been down at the hotel all day.
Mercifully.
Yes. And so she had not checked email, she had not checked Facebook, and I was able to tell her in person that, you know, I won this audition, we're going to move. And it was a shock. It was a lot to take in.
Well, too much to even imagine. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, I'm sure it was one step at a time.
Absolutely. Well, the first step is, you know, we have to sell everything we own and sell our house in Texas and spend some time with our family and worry about visas and all of the paperwork and everything. Not to mention trying to learn a new language and fit into a new culture and all of this kind of stuff. So it was a massive shift in our life.
Okay, but first rehearsal, you're sitting in the brass section of the Vienna Philharmonic. These musicians are so heavenly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. What was that sound? That did you want to cry?
I did. So one of the things that I didn't know about the Vienna Philharmonic when I auditioned or when I started to audition was that it's actually two jobs in one. So you in order to get into the Vienna Philharmonic, you have to audition for the Vienna State Opera Orchestra. And then if you get into that, then you're invited to be in the Vienna Philharmonic. So you're actually in two orchestras at one time. And so, you know, you're playing 15 nights a month in the Vienna State Opera, and then, but then also a full-time symphony orchestra job on the top of that. So actually, my first 2 months in the orchestra, they decided to ease me in, quote unquote, into the opera. The part about that is that the opera doesn't really rehearse because they do a different performance every night from September 1st through the end of June, and really only take a couple nights off, maybe Christmas Eve and Good Friday, something like that. And so there's a different opera every night, and they just don't have time to rehearse all of that.
Right.
So you only get rehearsals if there's going to be a new big premiere or something like that. Otherwise, you don't.
You just
sit down and you play.
Yes.
You know?
You come prepared and then watch the conductor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For most of the members of the orchestra, they've done Der Rosenkavalier hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. So a rehearsal is a moot point. Just sit down and watch the conductor. For a new person, though, who's never even seen an opera all the way through, which I was ashamed to admit at that time, it was nightmarish. Any gray hair that I have was probably from that time, because you can learn the part and you can listen to recordings and you can mark up the score and everything, but there's nothing that prepares you for sitting down. I was really fortunate that my first few operas were some that were not that hard to play: Carmen, Magic Flute, Simone Boccanegra. But then a few weeks in, one of our principal trombonists had to have his wisdom teeth out, and so I had to step up from second trombone to first trombone and do Elektra.
I was thinking Strauss. Mm. Oh gosh.
Elektra, Salome, Der Rosenkavalier. There was just a lot of Richard Strauss that was coming right at that time, and I did all of those, no rehearsal. Meistersinger, no rehearsal. And it was very stressful, to say the least. But sitting down for the first time in the Philharmonic, in the Musikverein, was an absolutely transcendent moment for me. Actually, the 10-year anniversary of that performance is coming up in just about a month. And it was Mahler's first symphony. And so I'm playing in the Musikverein where Mahler conducted, and playing for this orchestra that, Mahler was the music director of the Staatsoper for 10 years, and playing, in this section that was just an absolutely dream come true. During the rehearsals, it was mainly just trying to survive and don't play in a rest and don't play a major third and a minor chord and don't do anything really bad to mess up. Once we got to the performance, though, I mean, it was hard to make it through, actually, because I was quite emotional. My wife was there. My parents had flown over there for my first performance, and it was transcendent. It's something I'll never forget. I was the only American in the orchestra, and so there had been this sort of fear of being the one left out or sort of the isolated one outside the circle. But sitting there and playing with the orchestra at that time, it's like I am one of them. I am in this orchestra, and I'm making music with, in my opinion, the greatest orchestra in the world. At least when they're doing Mahler, they're the greatest orchestra in the world. And, you might not want to hear them do Bernstein, but, but doing Mahler, it's between they and the Berliner, I think, are the best in the world at that kind of music. And it belongs to them, and it's in their blood, it's in their souls. And, I'm here and I'm a part of this. And that's when the whirlwind stopped for the first time, was during that first concert, where from the moment that I had received word that I was going to, have a chance to audition, all the way to that moment was just one giant blur of just try to get from one moment to the next and survive. That was the first time that I go, this is my career now, that I'm a professional musician, and they're paying me to do this, which was, kind of surreal.
How old were you at this time?
I was 25.
25, yeah. Gosh.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of the frying pan into the fire.
That's right. Indeed.
Yeah. I'm curious, too, how were you accepted as an American playing in the Munich, in the Vienna Phil?
It took a while. Not personally. I mean, personally, I was accepted, straight away. Everybody was very nice to me. They were very tolerant of my horrible German. I sounded like a kindergartner, and I had had a couple German courses at the University of Tennessee, but I was not fluent or anything. And so it took me a while to learn, but they were very accommodating. They tried to help me feel included on tours and things like that, and they were very helpful. Musically, it took a little while, mainly just because they're so protective of their style. It's a It's a point of national pride. It's a point of the tradition. You know, they've been doing this since 1842, and they have a very specific way that they think this music goes. Mm. And, you know, it's hard to argue with them because, you know, the music belongs to them. All of these composers lived and worked and spent most of their careers in Vienna, so many of the great composers. And so there's a direct line from the current members of the Vienna Philharmonic all the way down to the premieres of most of these pieces, either through their teachers or just through the tradition. And so it took a while to show them that I really could play this style and I really would not try to sort of Americanize everything.
Right. Play Mahler with an American accent.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Right. And so in some ways I feel like the standard was a little higher than if I were not American, just because they were so not afraid, but they were just really
protective
of their music and wanted to make absolutely sure that I was going to come to their style rather than trying to impose mine on them.
Yeah. Any people in particular that you formed long-lasting friendships with?
Sure. The first and foremost would probably be Ian.
Yeah.
He became not only my mentor and principal trombonist, but a dear friend. Mark Gall was brought into the orchestra at the same time I was. So my position was a vexil posauna, second trombone, moving to principal. Mark was brought in as a second trombone, moving to bass trombone. And so we came in at the same time. He had been playing, he's an Austrian, he had been playing at the Vienna Volksoper for several years. And so he already had a job and had been subbing with the orchestra for quite some time. So they brought him in actually without an audition and just put him there as an appointment, but had an audition for my spot. And he's only 3 years older than me, so we were both young and new in the orchestra and sort of got to grow up together in the orchestra. And he's still a very dear friend. But really, the whole trombone section are people that I still keep in touch with. But honestly, outside of that, it was mostly, you know, acquaintances and things like that.
I'm curious to know if, who was principal conductor at the time?
Well, in the Staatsoper, we have a music director, which when I first was hired, that was Seiji Ozawa. And then he retired my second year or third year, and in came Franz Welser-Müst, who's now, he's in Cleveland here in the States, but he's the music director of the Vienna State Opera. The Vienna Philharmonic doesn't have a principal conductor or a music director. They often, back in the day, they used to have subscription conductors. So Karajan was the subscription conductor for a long time, Mahler, you know, they've had, and so people that have big associations with the Vienna Philharmonic, sometimes people assume that, for instance, Karajan was the music director for years, but the position just doesn't exist. They're all guests of the Vienna Philharmonic.
That's wonderful. You got to work with a lot of the top conductors
in
the world.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts, that we didn't have a music director, but we basically just stole the music directors from all the great orchestras of the world. So I got to work with Simon Rattle and Marius Janssens and Dudamel, and I mean, just basically all the principal conductors or the music directors from all the other great orchestras in the world.
I'm speaking with Jeremy Wilson. I want to remind listeners that he's in performance tonight, beginning at 7:30, and there is a portion of the evening at 7 o'clock in which you can hear meet Jeremy in person, as he'll be interviewed on stage by another trombonist, Evan Clifton, and that's. This is a ticketed event. There are tickets available at the door through the box office, and the website is wmish.edu/music/events. Also here joining us for this interview is Stephen Wolfenbarger, the professor of trombone at Western Michigan University, and a significant person in the world of trombone.
Indeed.
Many of your students have gone on to great things. I'd like to give Jeremy a break. You've done all the heavy lifting so far and great storytelling. I'd like to save a little for later so that we can hear some playing. This is in the style that we'll hear tonight because it's a recital performance.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you and pianist Julian Tay, mm-hmm. who has recently sort of rejoined mm-hmm. the School of Music faculty. So nice to have her back
yeah.
as now a full-time professor.
Yep, absolutely. She's phenomenal.
Yeah. Would you introduce this piece by Eric Uwais, and we'll hear the first movement of,
sure.
of this piece here.
So it's the Sonata for Trombone and Piano by Eric Uwais, and this piece has played a large role in my career. The first time that I won the international or the American Trombone Workshop solo competition was through this piece. I used it also on this tour, which is from where the recording comes, and I also played it on my audition for the job I hold now at the Vanderbilt University Blair School of Music. So I've always enjoyed playing it, and it's been a big part of my career.
Eric Uwais is a wonderful American composer, living mm-hmm. composer.
That's right.
And just a nice guy to meet. I'm sure you've met him.
Indeed, yes. So I was fortunate enough this summer to premiere a piece by Eric for the International Trombone Festival in Redlands, California. He wrote a piece for me called Redlands Fantasia, and that's going to be on my program tonight.
Thank you. Trombonist Jeremy Wilson is my guest here on WMUK this morning, along with Steve Wolfenbarger, professor of trombone at Western. And we've just heard a fascinating story of how Mr. Wilson grew up in a small town in Tennessee and gradually realized his talent through college, and then an amazing opportunity to audition for the Vienna Philharmonic. Sort of fell in your lap after submitting a CD to the International Trombone Association competition.
That's right.
And at that, how many years did you spend with the Vienna Phil?
5 years.
5 years. Yeah. Hectic years.
Five very hectic years. I feel like I lived a whole lot more than 5 years of life in those 5 years of time. Yeah, for sure.
So what made you decide to leave?
Well, basically, when we had been there maybe a year or 18 months, something like that, on the advice of Ian Bousfield, he said, you know, stay here a year and then reevaluate. And then maybe at 3 years, reevaluate. And then at 5 years, reevaluate. You know, just because it is difficult to live as an expatriate. And it was difficult for my wife as well. We had our first son. He was born over there in my second year there. And the orchestra toured a lot. After about a year and a half to 2 years, I think we knew that a career there was unsustainable, that I was not going to be able to spend 20, 25, 30 years and just retire there the way that I might have imagined when I got the job. You know, some people I think are wired to live abroad. Some people, you know, for them, Tokyo is Paris, is Johannesburg. I mean, it's all the same difference to them. For us, we really missed Tennessee, and we really missed our family. We're very close with our family, and so it was hard to be away from them. And we thought, you know, let's see if we can stick it out for 10 years. If we make it 10 years, then, you know, I'm 35, I've had a 10-year career in the Vienna Philharmonic, I can probably find something stateside. At the time I was thinking maybe an orchestral position. After about 3 or 4 years, I started to have this itch to teach again, because, you know, all the way back to the beginning of my story, that's what I wanted to do. I have a passion for teaching. And in the end, I was quite unhappy. I might say more correctly, I was quite unfulfilled. So enjoying your job and being good at your job and having fun at your job is sometimes quite different than being fulfilled by your job. We always hope that they overlap, but they don't always necessarily overlap. That's what I found. I enjoyed my job. I loved every bit of the traveling and the performing and the rehearsals. I was treated beautifully. I was having an absolute blast at the pinnacle of our profession, but I didn't feel like I mattered. I didn't feel like I was doing really what I was wired to do. And so I looked into some teaching positions there, and they just really are hard to sustain because of the orchestra is just touring and working all the time. And some of the members of the orchestra do have teaching positions as well as being in the Vienna Philharmonic. But usually those people are people that don't have children or their children are grown and gone. So I had a young son at the time. We wanted more children. I thought this is, you know, not only with the job, but also children. So I started to think about ways that I could come back to the States as a teacher. And I reached out actually to Vern, who I mentioned before, and just thought, you know, Vern, what are you hearing? He was a guy that had his ear to the ground in the industry, and he always knew all the jobs that were open. So he said, I've written a few letters of recommendation for this job or this job or this job. I don't think they'd be great for you. Job X or job Y or job Z might be open in the next couple of years. Maybe you want to think about that. He said, I don't know how much they'd pay, but I did write a letter of rec for Vanderbilt University. Isn't that near Tennessee? And I said, yeah, that is in fact in Tennessee, about an hour from where I grew up. And the reason he said he didn't know how much they would pay is because it had been previously an adjunct position. And so he's like, I don't know, you know, how the pay and the benefits would compare to what you're getting now in the Vienna Philharmonic. Upon further investigation, the position was now being advertised as a full-time tenure track position, associate or assistant professor, which is a game changer. That means that the compensation and the benefits and everything are competitive with what I was getting. And it's in my hometown. And the Blair School of Music is doing amazing things. It's a, you know, a high academic university, top 15 school and all of that. So I decided to investigate, and I inquired about the job, and things just lined up really nicely because, you know, I'm on the phone with the dean and asking about the job, and he goes, well, we would certainly consider you as a finalist, but, we would have to do a Skype interview or something like that. And I said, when are you wanting to have the interviews? He said, the second week of February. I looked on my calendar. I'm in the States in the second week of February. So it all just worked out really nicely that I was able to go for a live interview and audition. And when I got there and I met the students and I met the faculty and I saw the facility and I saw the vibe of the school, I thought, yes, this is something that could work. This is something that's worth leaving the greatest orchestra in the world for, because not only could I still come here and still make great music, but I could do what I'm really wired to do, and my family will be happy. For me, it was a no-brainer. If they give me this job, if they decide to offer it to me, I'm going to take it. And I did. So after five seasons in Vienna, I auditioned for the job and got it, and I've not looked back since. I miss the orchestra, of course. I miss performing on a regular basis with the orchestra. But I'm now doing what I was wired to do all along.
Now it's probably worth mentioning that when you took up the reins at Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. You kind of applied some of the same intensity you would have brought to practicing and preparing your mm-hmm. orchestral parts to creating a studio.
That's right.
And you renewed or got really acquainted with Steve.
That's right.
At that
so I decided if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to actually leave this position that other people would just kill for, if I'm going to take this opportunity and move on to a different chapter of my life, I'm not going to do it in a lackluster way. I'm going to give it everything that I've got. So I started to look around in my first year, you know, who are the people that are doing this job at a very high level? And just honestly, Steve Wolfenbarger came to the very top of my list. This is somebody who knows how to build a studio, how to run a studio. You see his students all over the place. And to me, that's the true mark of a great teacher. Not necessarily the prestige or the reputation of the school or whatever, but where do you see this person's students popping up all over the place? And there are Western Michigan graduates all over our industry in very high levels. So he was one of probably three or four people that I solicited, please let me come to Kalamazoo and pick your brain and tell me how to do this, because this is something I've never done before.
Frank Band into the fire once again.
You know, I was educated as a music educator, and it was something I'd wanted to do, and I had some ideas, but I've never actually done it. And you're doing it and have done it very well for a very long time. So I came up and Steve was very gracious with his time. And I came and did a recital here and just spent a couple of days over coffee just, you know, talking to him about how do I do this. And so to this day, you see a lot of the DNA of the Western Michigan Trombone Studio in the Vanderbilt University Trombone Studio.
Yeah, when he contacted me, I was shocked. And my first question, you know, we operate on limited budgets here and everywhere else. And my first question was, well, what will you charge, you know, to give a recital? And he says, oh, nothing. And I was like, well, that's a no-brainer, you know. Of course, yeah, I would love to have you. And this is your third trip up here, so.
That's right.
That's great. And we've really used up an entire hour with a terrific story and getting to know Jeremy Wilson a little bit. And I hope you do keep coming back.
I will. I always have a great time here.
Kalamazoo. And Steve, it's great to have you in as well.
Oh,
please bring any guests that you feel like
to
WMUK anytime. I'd like to save a little time here at the end of the hour to hear a piece by Korngold, who's one of my favorite composers.
Absolutely.
And this comes from another recital performance that you did. It's on the program tonight. There are works that by W. Gregory Turner, who I don't know, is I assume a contemporary composer?
He is. He's primarily a film and video game and television composer based out of Nevada now. But he's actually a WMU graduate.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well programmed.
Yeah.
Susan Mutter or Mutter?
I want to say Mutter because
of German.
But I believe it's Mutter. She's a horn player, and I think she's based in Michigan as well. I think she's in the Detroit area.
The piece has an interesting sequence. It's called Ages, and it's five movements, 6, 15, 34, 66, and 92. Mm-hmm. So you live a lifetime in this piece?
That's right. Those are different ages in a boy's life.
We have a piece called Aura by Anthony DiLorenzo. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Eric Uwazin. Philippe Gobert, who's known to flutists, certainly. Mm-hmm. But this is an original trombone piece.
That's right.
By the turn-of-the-century French composer. Then the Korngold. And finally, Slipstream for trombone and looping station.
Yes.
I'm assuming that's going to have some neat features.
It is.
People will enjoy. Details again. The concert begins with a live and interactive discussion at 7. Music begins at 7:30. Tickets are available at the door. The website is wmich.edu/music/events. Jeremy Wilson and Steve Wolfenbarger, thank you very much for being my guests.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.